Welcome back.
How do you roll it in?
Yeah, I don't know. We never have a plan.
We never have a...
drum roll.
Yeah.
In this year of coronavirus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything's out the window.
ACBC, is it? Before Corona, after Corona.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Snacks and Chats. We've been doing a little MMA series, so it's nice to be reunited with you.
Yeah, yeah.
3 years later.
After, I think, this was 2017, last time I saw you guys. Yeah.
The last time we saw you, you had you weren't fighting in the UFC yet. You
had kickboxing.
Yeah, you'd just come off your first
loss. Yeah, my knockout loss. Yes, yeah. I remember that, yeah, and we talked about it on the podcast, and I remember, now you bring back some memories.
Mayweather and McGregor hadn't fought yet.
Yeah.
Bisping was still the middleweight champ.
Mm-hmm.
A lot's changed for you.
Yeah,
Israel Adesanya.
Yes, yes, thank you.
I thought I'd better say your name just in case people would find me like, who the fuck are you talking
to?
I'm
sure they know. Yeah.
Not everybody does, if that's the right people.
But now you are the UFC middleweight champion. Congratulations.
Like I said, thank you, thank you. And I appreciate the love you guys having me back, still supporting me through and through. So, nah, it's good. Make a full circle in it.
Mm, it's been great to watch you, and it's been incredible. I went back and listened to it, and I just thought it was incredible. All the things you said came to pass.
Yeah.
You know?
I think if you know, you know. And I've always said that, like, before it became cool, I was always saying that, like, if you know, you know. And some people just try and shy away from it, like, they, you know, they have greatness bestowed upon them, but, you know, they're scared of failure, but they're also scared of succeeding. They're scared of success.
Definitely.
So if you know, you know. And for me, I knew. I just knew, like, I can do this thing because blah, blah, blah. I don't know what it is. I just have it. And I'm like, cool. It's been bestowed upon me. I'm not going to shy away from it. I'm just going to own it. And, you know, like I said, even in my Halbrook speech, I was talking about, you know, the top uppy thing. And I got a little bit of flack for that. I got some praises as well, but I got a little bit of flack for that because people don't believe it. It's actually a thing in New Zealand. But in my head, I'm like, you guys are in your little perch mansions in Herne Bay, so you don't understand what it's like out here in the streets.
Mm.
But yeah, so for me, when I first did the show, I was saying everything I wanted to do. There's a method to my madness. Like, if I put it out there, I have to do it. So my brain, even subconsciously, is going to do every single thing and its power to make it happen, because then I look like a eat-ass, and no one wants to look like a eat-ass. So I was just like, that's why the methods, I say what I want to do, and people, oh, what a cocky cunt, you know, this guy thinks he's a man, but I'm just saying it just so I can, my word is bond. I have to hold myself accountable for the things that I said, and I have to live up to it. So that's why when I first came on the show, I was just saying everything that I'm going to do, and I went out there and did it. It's been fun, yeah.
I think one of the most enjoyable things for me in seeing your rise and in seeing, I guess, New Zealand mainstream media cotton on to who you are and appreciate you for who you are, naming you as the New Zealand Sports Man of the Year. I think one of the most enjoyable things for me was seeing how much that meant to the African community in New Zealand.
Yeah, I didn't realize that as well, but I was getting a lot of messages and even people face to face telling me, like, it was because apparently I'm the first colored male to win that award, and that's why even in the speech I drop names like David Tua, Ray Sever, because I'm like, these are people before me that have never been acknowledged.
How have they not? Yeah.
Exactly. David Tua, fucking David fucking Tua, and you've never acknowledged him as one of New Zealand's great sportmen. So for me, I had to drop their names just to honor them in a way. And yeah, it's weird, but yeah, crazy times. Times are changing, I guess.
And yeah, I thought it was great that you did. You paid homage to the, like you said, the those before you, but also important to acknowledge the people looking up to you as well, and seeing, being able to see themselves in you.
Mm-hmm.
I think the New Zealand African community, for one, and also the fight community, which is often overlooked too.
Yeah, I was quite surprised because I got there first with Eugene. We rolled up in the old Pocket Rocket. It's this, is it a Honda Accord, 1980-something? It's this car that we used to go all around the country to Masterton, Hastings, Whanganui, different places to local fight nights. So it was like, it just made sense. So everyone thought
of your story.
Exactly. So yeah. People thought I'd pull up in Kurama and the McLaren and be like, but nah, we just pulled up in the old Pocket Rocket just to like one more last ride. Because it's been around the country with us to all these different local fight nights, these grassroots stuff. So to take us to the big stage in New Zealand alongside all the other mainstream sports, if you will. And I kept on hearing that word all night, that traditional sports. And I'm like, shut up and listen to what you're saying. Yeah. What is tradition? Tradition is what you make it. You know what I mean? And they keep, this is just not a traditional sport. And like, I want to shoot my brains out every time I hear it. I'm like, I know what they're trying to say, but it's so stupid because they don't even realize how ignorant they're being, you know?
There's a snobbery to it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, bro. Oh, so much that night as well. And so I was... smile and wave, smile and wave. Yeah, oh, thank you. Oh, you speak so well.
Oh, no.
I'm like, yeah, I've been speaking English all my life. But even that speech, man, like, I had a metamorphosis on February 10th after my cat got run over. Shout out to Cinderu, RIP.
But RIP. Like,
yeah. So that one, that threw me for a loop. I'm still going through all that stuff. But and that was when I decided, like, I'm not leaving. So that was that night.
Mm-hmm.
I had this metamorphosis. It's hard to explain, but I was going through my tracks on my old phone and I was playing it in my car and I ended up sitting in my car for like 3 hours, 4 hours. My regular phone was down. I didn't even touch it. Mm. I was just vibing the tracks and I created this hyperbolical time chamber in my car. And I felt in flow after that for so many weeks. And I think the speech itself, when I was talking at the Halbergs, I wrote down some keynotes about 20, 30 minutes beforehand of what I want to touch on. So mm-hmm. But then I still have it on my phone. But then the rest of it, some of the stuff I was saying, and even I watched myself talking and the conviction I was speaking when I was like, I felt like a vessel. I didn't feel like it was me. Because I was quite surprised some of the bars I was spitting and the confidence. Like, I caught myself off guard. Yeah. So I was just like, where is this coming from? But yeah, it was just magical, man, for me. And just to be able to just see the people that came to support me, like people from South Island. What's his name? Hammer Team, the captain. Fuck, I can't remember his name now. I know his name, it's just escaped me. Lolo, yeah. Paula, like all these other people. And I'm like, oh, they're really here just because this is something big, not just for me, but for the whole team, Fight Sports in New Zealand. And like I said, we love a good one out. So why in the world are we, you know, shying away from acknowledging some of the greatest fighters that have come out of the history, you know? Like I mentioned those great names as well, just because I felt like they needed to know how ignorant they've been over the years. So I kicked the door open and now they know. And even if they don't like it, they're gonna respect it. That's the main thing.
Yeah, you left the door open for the next people.
Yeah.
They can try and shut it. Yeah. I'm the bouncer now.
No, it was an exceptional speech, and if anyone's listening to this who hasn't listened to the speech, go listen to it. What I found interesting was that you said, I am extraordinarily humble, believe me.
That one went over people's head, because that's Drax from, it's a line from Guardian of the Galaxy.
Right.
Batista, his character, he's like, I too am extraordinarily humble. So that was like a little, for the nerds, like a little low key something. But yeah, and those who know me, like, cause it, I don't know. I guess I have to flex it sometimes, cause I don't always try and flex like, oh, I'm humble, I do this. But I think everyone has humility on some level. And you just have to be able to know that in my position, you have to know you're the shit, but you have to know you ain't shit.
Yeah.
And it's a fine line you have to walk constantly because of also the magnifying glass that you have on your life when you're in the spotlight.
When you said that, I thought to be a good fighter, you surely have to have some level of humility to be able to recognize your own flaws and to also recognize that the other person could be better than you, or one mistake and the other person could have the better of you. There has to be, would you agree, I guess, because I don't know, but would you agree that there does have to be a level of humility as a fighter to be good?
Like humbleness, like true humility is when Dan Hooker is on my back for 4 minutes of the 5 minutes of the round and I can't shake him off me.
Mm.
Or when Carlos Ahlberg cracks me with a right hand to the body, or John Vaque cracks me with a right hand to the face. That's real humility, you know? Like, people don't know that because they're not in the trenches with us. But every single day, I get humbled every single day. And I humble people every single day,
yeah.
You know? So it's if in our team, you can't have a big ego. It'll get crushed. We'll roast you. They'll eat you alive. You wouldn't survive. A lot of people have come from different parts of the world even now because of the success we're getting. And some people haven't been as received as they could have been because they came in with a different attitude, you know? And yeah, it's unfortunate because you're going to get that in anything you do in life. But yeah, in the fight game, 100%. If you're not humble, you'll get humbled. Yeah.
Have you felt in your UFC career so far, has there been any moments where you've felt humbled in front of the public?
That's a good question. In front of the public. I don't think so. No, not really yet. I've kind of kept my wits about me. I've kind of just been, I've done the right things, put it that way. I've done the right things because I've prepped for this. Like, I've thought about this for the last how many years. So I've prepped for things outside the cage and in the cage.
Have you read any of Andre Agassi's autobiography?
I know the name. Why do I know
He's
the name?
He's a tennis player. He's okay. Like an 8-time Grand Slam tennis player.
Okay. I knew the name, it rang a bell, but no, I haven't read it.
And I know, I mean, for people who I guess are just getting familiar with you, your rise to the top will have seemed quick.
Yeah.
But it wasn't quick, right? Mm. It was years of grind and hard work.
Mahi.
There's a quote that I wanted to run past you from Andre Agassi and to see if you can relate to this or if you disagree. So this was after winning his first Grand Slam after trying and failing for a few years. And he says, "Now that I've won a slam, I know something very few people on earth are permitted to know. A win doesn't feel as good as a loss feels bad. And the good feeling doesn't last as long as the bad, not even close."
Facts. So in my kickboxing career, it got to a point before my first loss, and that was a judge's...
Yeah.
Like they did one of those ones in China to me because I was the B side at the time. But I was always like, cool. I just win a fight. I watched the fight maybe once, twice. Early on, when I first started fighting, my first fight, I watched it for like 6 months straight.
Yeah.
Almost every day, just amazed. Like, and then by my 20th fight, I'd be like, right, next. Cool, fight again, next. And I was always, so it was just like, oh, whatever, next. And even my UFC debut, same thing. I fought like 5 times in 1 year. Oh, well, 1 year and a day, but I say, well, I rounded up to 1 year. So, but I had to like pause at some point. So I think after my silver fight, was it silver? Either silver or Gastelum fight. I had to pause and be like, right, smell the roses.
Mm.
Like, take a look at what you've done. And I look back and I'm like, shit, I've done a lot. So you're always going into the next thing, onto the next thing. Like, cool, next. I can win. It feels good. I fucking love winning. I hate losing. Like, trust me, every time I'll take winning over losing. But you learn a lot from a loss. But a loss as well can definitely put you in some dark places, especially in this game, because I'm bearing my all to the world. Like, the Whittaker fight, still to this date, 60,000 people or 57,000 plus or something, the biggest attendance in UFC history. And I come out there with my boys, crumping, dancing. And for me, I wanted to authentically express myself to my truest form so I can stay true to myself as art, my self-expression. Because back in the day when we first started doing this shit at City Focus and Rotorua, people was walking around laughing at us like, look at these cunts, what are they doing? Because we didn't know what we were doing. We just felt the vibe of Rise, you know? So for me, it was like a big fuck you to all those cunts that were like back then laughing at us or whatever. And also for me, it was also just a way of expressing my truest form. It gave me power. Like the little, you know, hints to the Naruto, the weebs, doing all my stuff, the spirit bomb. When I put my hand up there and all my team behind me put their hand up, I felt I did this. because I took the spirit. And I told some of my friends as well, when you see my hand go up, I don't care where you are in the world, where you're watching it, put your hand up. I told them, I was like, put your hand up. I want to feel you. So when I did that, people think it's all fun and games. Mm. I'm crazy. I believe this shit.
Yeah.
And the mind does not know what's the difference between reality and fantasy sometimes. So it really empowers me. And I walked out there and I was just like, I was feeling myself, man. And to go out there and then in a sea of Aussies, have little pools of Kiwis, be able to rejoice and tear that place down. And my whole team as well, Dan and Brad, 3-peat. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. I rambled there. I forgot the question, but it was about, what was the question
with
again?
With the winning, I guess.
So if I had lost, because I put myself out there, I raised the bar. If I had lost, I would have been in a dark place. Mm. But I like to risk it for the biscuit. You know what I mean? Like you risk it and you win and it felt so good, but it's short-lived. It is short-lived. He's right. And like if I've had some losses in my time that put me in some dark places, but then I realized that my people still love me. My family still loves me. My dogs still love me. So, yeah. But he's right with that quote. Winning is sometimes short-lived, especially when you're at the top, when you have a target on your back, when you're holding the gold. But then losing stays with you sometimes. But are you going to let it keep you down or are you going to let it mean something and, you know, use it to work off, build yourself, you know? Because every time I've lost in my career in kickboxing, I come back and knock the guy out. Every single time I've lost in kickboxing, I always come out and I fuck the next person up and, yeah, I use it for something, yeah.
I remember I was a little worried about the Whittaker fight until... It's funny because you're like, only the people who don't know their shit are worried.
Yeah. He's a dangerous man too. He's a dangerous man, so you had every right to be worried.
Yeah. But yeah, I was worried until the dance.
Yeah.
And I was like,
he's got it.
Fuck. Yeah. He's like, I stopped worrying after that because for like, yeah, it's been talked about.
Appreciate that. Yes.
But it's been talked about so much already, but just to have the balls to like just come out and do a full fucking dance routine. Mm. I was like, okay, he's fine. He'll be fine.
And I remember even someone's manager at my last fight, before the fight, was telling me like, as a fighter back in my day, I don't know how you did that in your last fight. And I was like, what? He's like, doing the whole dance thing before you enter the ring. Like, I couldn't do it. Like, I don't know how you did it. But it put me at ease. I went there the evening before, on the Saturday, and with my crew, and we rehearsed it. We just ran through it. And then I went backstage into the truck, and I wanted to see everything, how it played out. So they played out the rehearsal for me. And I felt like a producer, like I was producing my own show. Like it's my, and I told Dana that I tried to do it at the Silver fight till that morning, Robert pulled out and stuff. And then, I became the main event. But then before that, he was supposed to main event with Kelvin. And they denied it then because I didn't really have as much pull. So for this show, I was like, it's my fucking show in my backyard. I'm the headliner. It's my way or no way. But yeah, it's empowering. Like, and I'm glad you stopped worrying because when we did that rehearsal, that whole night, all I did on my phone was just watch the fights. I mean, watch the rehearsal.
Mm.
So I wasn't even worried about the fight. I wasn't thinking about the fight. Robert would have been in his bed just thinking. And I knew he was nervous. I knew he was. And I can body doesn't lie. The energy never lies. So when he was saying all this stuff, like, oh, I'm not worried. I'm this and that. I'm like, but your body's saying otherwise. Even at the weigh-ins when I went, look at me, and we went face to face, and I remember this feeling of just projecting my energy, my mana onto him, and I made him feel me. If you watch the weigh-in again, he was looking at me, but it was like a battle of spirits, and I just knew I sunned him right there. The battle was won right there, and then after doing the rehearsal, we rehearsed it like probably 5-6 times the night before, and then I'm on my phone, and I fall asleep watching the rehearsal. Then when I came out through the tunnel, and I see my boys, I'm like, you ready? Bro, felt like deja vu. Like, cause I already done it the day before.
Mm.
And I did the rehearsal and I did the walk to the cage, pretended to do the prep point, jumped in. It's on my Instagram somewhere. Like I rehearsed everything. I jumped on top of the cage at the end. And it's just, they call it paralysis over analysis. Like Robert would have been stewing about the fight, about me, thinking about me all night and just like, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that. And then you overanalyze. So for me, I'm just like, fuck, it's gonna look dope. It's gonna fucking look dope. And then, you know, I was able to just be free, you know? And yeah, it's a beautiful feeling. I can't wait to do it again.
We can't wait either.
Yeah.
Well, going up against you, there's the in the ring that you have to worry about, but I'm sure it takes a mental toll
100%.
To go up against you with all your talk.
Yeah, I know how to get you some, know, people. Like, some people it affects. Like Robert, I knew was affecting him. He had a good poker face. Kelvin, I didn't. There was nothing really to say, but Robert, it was. I think what really got to me at first was showed me his hand, and I mentioned this. People forget this. He started off by making this meme about me. And I was like, you don't make memes. That's not your style.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was his manager or something, but the fact that even he posted it, I'm like, you're acting out of character already. That's your first mistake. You showed me your hand too early. And people thought, oh, this and that, blah, blah, blah. He went 10 rounds with Romero. When are you going to beat him?
How much did that the people saying he went 10, Rob went 10 rounds with Romero, how much did that play into you wanting to take on Romero?
Okay, I thought that was going somewhere else.
Because
I didn't have to fight Romero. Remember that? I didn't have to fight him. He was like ranked number 4. He was coming off 3 losses. But I was like, there's no one else at the moment to fight. Give me that guy. And then I think the UFC initially, they didn't want to make that fight. Danny wasn't a fan of it. But then I told him I want Romero because I want to prove a point. And I kind of did, but not really. Like, I'm still like, I haven't watched the fight just because I've never been in over 100 fights, I've never been in a boring fight in my life.
It was a strange fight.
It's like, if I was like, for me, I cringe at it because I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? If
no,
I had known,
was...
I would have just fought like, spotted the bag the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
There's nothing to work
it was with. Really, it reminded me of the Lewis and Ngannou.
Yeah,
fight.
Yeah. Or even now, that was. I'm sure they're glad that my fight happened because now they can take the shine off them as well. And look at Ngannou now. There's people recency bias, so everyone's forgotten about the Lewis and Ngannou stuff.
Yeah.
Because look at what Ngannou's done after that. Just knocked. I think his combined fights in his last 3 or 4 fights is like under 5 minutes.
Mm.
He just goes in there and go to sleep.
Well, that's what I mean. I was, you know, there was all the shit talk afterwards, but. I just know from watching, like you said, that Lewis fight, it doesn't matter. People forget about that shit. And you know what happened to you? Coronavirus happened.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Everyone's like,
wait,
what?
So people
yeah, but I mean, before I fight again, I know that's the same thing as recency bias. People are like, oh, but his last fight, and this next fight is the one I'm really looking forward to. I feel like this next, we needed this. So I've used this analogy as well as I'm making a documentary, right? In a movie, everything starts like this, and my career has just been going like this.
Mm.
But you need like a valley, a dipping point. And an example, Conor McGregor's documentary, his one was when he lost to Nate Diaz. That was a valley. And then he came back again and beat Nate Diaz, then went on to win the double champ. Yeah, so this was my valley. This is my valley because there was all this hype about this fight that was going to be exciting. And I'm telling you, man, I allegedly told the right people to put a lot of money on a knockout. That I'm gonna knock him out, like allegedly, like 10 grand allegedly. So I knew what I wanted to do to him. If
have they come knocking on your door, wanting that money?
It was me, allegedly. allegedly. No, but like, yeah. So for me, I mean. Even I've got that sometimes. Like after the Super 8 one time at Hitch. I know you guys know Hitch back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Some guy came up to me like, gee, so big fan. Bro, I bet on you in the Super 8. Oh, you? And I was like, cool. He's like, oh, look. And he showed me like this fucking, a slip of $50 bet. And then I told my bro, you lost $50. I lost $50,000.
Shut up.
Exactly.
Yeah, like,
because people sometimes do that. They're like, oh, I'm putting money on you. You better win. And I'm like, what the fuck are you? Oh, I wasn't going to win. But now that Jeremy fucking put $100 on me, Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck.
I wasn't going to, but now I'm really going to try my hardest.
Yeah.
So that I found that way. And the guy kind of shut up straight up because I was like, the fuck? So you lost $50. Cool. I lost my chance at 50 grand because people cheated. You know, they cheated me out of it. So yeah, fuck you saying. And also my life's on the line at the same time as well. And I have a lot more on the line than whatever money they want to put on, you know? But yeah, so what was I saying? I lost my train of thought.
You're in a valley. You're in a valley right now.
Yeah. So this is it. And this next fight is the one, man. What exactly? And bro, you can't write this shit. You can't write this shit. It's like, I wanted to be on Fight Island. Me, Skinny, Bruce Lee versus this Juice Monkey. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's the perfect protagonist versus the antagonist. And then I'm going to shut this guy up. I'm going to shock the world because everyone, this is they're doubting me. And I'm like, doubt me again, please.
He even looks like the stereotypical, like in a movie, he would be what they would, the big scary
dude, right?
That's why
Silver changed my way of thinking about fighting. Because I saw this skinny black guy like fucking everyone up. Mm. And I'm like, I'm skinny and black. I can do that. I like fighting. Because I thought you had to be Arnold Schwarzenegger, because that's what Hollywood has perpetuated over the years. So everyone, the casuals, even some smart people, they still have casual brains. They still think that's the guy. Nah, bro, look at his fucking biceps. Gee, nah, he's got him. I'm not saying he's not good. He's good. He's a very formidable opponent, but they don't understand the levels to this. And I like the fact, like, people are doubting me right now. I'm like, good. Like 50 Cent said, I need you. I need you to hate so I can use you for your energy. I wouldn't say need, but I like it. I like that. I'm like, cool. You guys thought I'm, you know, they want to put that last fight on me. Dana and me talked after we went to the, he wanted to see me afterwards. It wasn't like a principal thing, but he just like, bro, I don't know what that guy was on. Like, I don't know why he just stood there. And I was like, I told them, you know, I can fight. You know, when it comes out, I throw it down. Like, Calvin Gaston, that fight.
So did Dana call you in asking for an explanation?
No, he called just tell me, just like, let me know, like, don't worry.
To be like, it's okay. It's all like, good.
Like,
I
he let
know,
me know yeah. what, because he had his press, he did his press conference, post-fight press conference first. Then he called me in just to like, so we're on the same page. Gotcha. Put it that way. So we're on the same page. So, because, it would, I mean, you can't put that on me. I was there. I was ready to fight.
No.
And the who stands there for the first 3 minutes and just like,
nah, it was very
bizarre.
I just thought it was bizarre from someone who it was likely their last chance.
100%. He's never going to see that again.
That you would just stand there.
Look at Silva. When he, in the second round, he jabbed me in the eye, like properly, legally, and jabbed me again offbeat, caught me. And he knew I was compromised. And I remember I saw two Silvas. And then he started to like put the action on, put the pressure on. Give me looks, feints, trying to attack. This guy, after about 2 minutes, I'm standing there and I made the mistake of attacking down the line rather than off center. And he caught me with an overhand left legally and his knuckle pushed my eye backwards. And I had an involuntary response. I went like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, just cover up. He's going to come in rushing now because he's not a smart striker. So I knew he was going to come bum rushing, but he just stood there. So I was like, okay, I'll just wait. And then I was waiting. And I was, so it's like, if you, like you said, it's your last shot.
Mm.
You hurt this guy. It's, look what Silva did. Silva came after me.
Yeah.
This guy just stood there. That just showed me he didn't want it.
Yeah.
What was his wrestling? All this wrestling. Even at one point, he's like, going to take you down. He said to me, I was like, try, bitch. And then about a minute later, he shot for a takedown. Boom, I get back up. I sprawled on him or something. Mm. And I'm not going to make the same mistake that made you punch me in the eye again. I'm gonna change my tactics and adjust and get the job done. And I did. And he posted this stupid video the next day. It was an old video.
You look at the video. Yeah, was that of him running?
It was an old video. Yeah. And he tried to do the dance. There's way you acting, you know, you can act it out. You can tolerate the pain just to show the narrative, you know. He's trying to control the narrative, but yeah, I didn't buy it.
What was Eugene saying to you? Because I imagine it would have been difficult for him to instruct you during a fight like that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember he told me, I don't know if it was before the fight or, I mean, if it was during the fight or after the fight, but he said, you got caught with that left because you attacked down the line. I need you to go off center like we practiced. Like I said, I haven't watched the fight yet, so I can't remember. I have to watch it again to like know what the corner said. But I remember, and what else did he give me advice? Because he kept on leaning to the right. So we're setting up, because I was going leg kicks. And at one point, whenever he throws a left, his overhand left from southpaw, he leans this way. So I was going to throw the left as well to the head. And at one point I threw it, but it went under his arm. So I mistimed that one. But it was just frustrating because then that just got me out of my game. And it got me out of my flow because I started thinking. Because it was a good plan by him. Sort of, Because stand there and just give me something completely different, that out of the ordinary, that I'm not used to. So it was a good plan by him. Like, that punch, if it rocked me or knocked me out, beautiful, masterful, like, masterful game plan.
Yeah.
But it didn't. It caught me. Cool. Not making that mistake again. But, yeah, I think Eugene just did the right thing. And we work well together. Like, I was able to call audibles. And I was able to adjust, you know, as he, as needed in the fight.
I was wondering if there was anything, if you're worried at all that there's anything to his, to the way he approached his fight with you. A lot of your game is getting reads off people with your
looks and feints.
Yeah, with your feints probing. And stuff. I was like, what, is that the answer? Yeah. Do you just stand there and do nothing?
Might be. Like, nah, I think, well, now I have a different answer for it now.
Yeah.
Try it again, motherfuckers. Yeah. Someone try that again. I have a different, like, it's just, he presented me with something I'd never seen before in over 100 fights. So, like I said, if that punch had rocked me or knocked me out, beautiful, masterful plan. But unfortunately, he didn't. And I whooped his ass anyway, so. But, yeah, I don't know. What else could someone have done? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just have to You're like, well, I mean, you're trying to CKB now.
Please, don't give CKB a bad name by saying that I trained there.
It's our new prospect.
Fuck.
Patched up.
It's just for fitness. Mm-hmm. This is a question from Dave. This is something that... he's curious as to whether you can feel or sense your opponent's embarrassment, like them getting embarrassed by what you're making them do or what you're making them miss.
I just thought of Brunson.
Can you feel that?
Silva a little bit, because Silva, he had a good poker face though. Like Silva, when I'd faint and he'd react, he'd do the trapping hands, the monkey hands. Mm. It's like, I know what you're doing. You're trying. I was meant to do this.
Just turn it into a dance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It turns. Oh, even like in the third round when I kicked him in the leg and I buckled him, he like did this drop it low, and like twerk type thing. And I was like, I should have just kicked him again. I shouldn't have looked at what he was doing. He mesmerized me with the booty shorts. But yeah. I can definitely feel them. Like Brunson, I said when he cheated. My last post on my Instagram, my recent one, about 5 days ago, was the one where I had this caption about emotion and feeling the difference and learning how to raise the feeling of anger for clarity. And I remember he was embarrassed when he pulled my shorts. He's like, oh, come on, man. Come on. Like Herb Dean's telling him, come on, I ain't pulling. I do it. I'm like, bro, we seen you. It's on the fucking tape. But he's trying to act like he didn't pull the shorts. It's like, but I knew he was embarrassed. And that's when I flipped him off and I went at him. And after I whooped his ass, yeah, I could even during the fight, I could feel it was like, he knew he was out of his depth. He like, oh, fuck, what have I gotten myself into? Like, he knew. And even you watch me, there's even on one of my old posts, I put the captions of what I said when I was in my stance before the fight. I was like, let's go, bitch. I'll show you who's skinny. I was waiting, because that's what he kept on saying before the fight. You skinny, bro. You skinny, bro. You need to lift some weight. So I said, let's go, bitch. I'll show you who's skinny. And I fucked him up.
Yeah, and so during that fight, there were moments where you could sense that feeling.
He was already crumbling. Yeah. That's why he just got me to the cage and just held me there. And I was like, right, I'm going to break free soon. And 3, 2, boom, and I break free. And he was shooting for the takedown, hit him with the knee. So I could feel, definitely, you can feel when they're starting to, like, wilt, when they're starting to wither, and, like, they know, oh, shit, this is too much. Like, and there's that voice that'll tell them. Everyone has that voice in their head. It's okay. Don't worry, just tap out. Just tap out, it's okay. Like, I had it in the Gaslam fight in the end of the third round, late in the third round or in the fourth round. It's like, you've done enough. You hit him with a spinning elbow. You rocked him. You dropped him. It's okay if you just chill for a bit. But yeah, fuck up, shut up, go. And I can't. You have to tell that voice to fuck off.
Yeah, because it's there. Interesting.
It is. Nah, yeah. Everyone, I don't give a fuck who you are. Or if you're Mike Tyson had that voice. Mm. Ali had that voice. All the greats. But you have to override it. It's self-preservation, because that's what your brain wants to do. It wants to protect you. So it's trying like, don't do it. No, please, it's okay. But now, yeah, fuck off. I'm trying to be great. You go at it. Yeah.
Wow, so in the third, that's what your brain was trying to tell you to do.
It was like, I remember it was like this feeling of, and it happens in a split second. It's not like a prolonged thing.
Mm.
It's like a lot of dialogue in a split second. So it's just like, you know, you've dropped them. You've shown you're a fucking champ. You know, you did a cool spinning elbow. That's cool. You can just chill. And I had to be like, fuck off. And I just went at him. And yeah, that fight, that fifth round is still one of, like, in my life, that's one of the greatest moments of my life. Not like in fighting, like just fighting in my life. Cause I dug deep in that one and I found the new level. So yeah, that one is something that no one can ever take away from me. And I'm glad, cause he got close, but I'm glad I got the nod.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Well, fight of the year that year, right?
It was one of the best fights I've ever seen. And I'm not even being biased. No, it's like a movie, like first round, all this hype about me and, you know, I'm about to fight for my first title. He rocks me. And then, all the fucking haters would have been like, yes, finally, the hype train's about to die today.
Yeah, man.
And I'm just like... Because
it's often like that, too. It's often like, I mean, we just saw it with Ferguson and Gaethje.
Man, crazy.
Rockhold and your mate Romero. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like,
they want to build you up. People, that's what they do. I've seen in the Hollywood and movies and all that kind of stuff. Music, they build you up so they can tear you down. I've even been guilty of it. I've been a fan of someone. I'd be like, I just want to see him lose. But it's just you. I don't know what it is. It's just human condition. That's why I talked about it in the Hal Brooks speech. But like I said, I've been guilty of it, but I've checked myself for it because I'm like, I watch myself the way Jane Goodall watches apes. I check myself. I'm like, why are you feeling this way? What's causing that feeling of jealousy inside you? And I feel like if you can identify the monster, then you can kill it. And then if it raises its ugly head again, then it's easier to kill the second time. So now I can, if I feel myself starting to get jealous or insecure about something, I check it, I nip it in the bud, and I address it straight away. But I've learned that through my therapist and other just life experiences as well, just to help me, I don't know, not fuck up in this game, because it's going to be easy to fuck up if I let myself, you know?
So is that a huge part of, I mean, there's obviously the physical training that you have to go through, but do you find yourself making a point of, like, mental training,
yeah,
of giving 100%. Yourself, okay, today is my day where I reflect on what I've done, or is it as conscious as that, or is it just something that you've got?
It's just part of my life now. Like, I'm up, like, this through this lockdown, I wake up around midday or 1, and I'll go to bed around 4, 5, or 6 a.m. I like more nighttime than day because, I know, something about the nighttime gives me clarity, gives me time to be by myself with my own thoughts. And I've had that through my young adult life. I like being alone with my own thoughts. I like pondering. I like being in my own head. I like using my imagination. It helped me a lot in China when I was living there. And yeah, it's just part of it now. And also seeing a therapist or someone to help me guide me towards certain realizations, certain epiphanies. And, you know, like the first time I remember was after my UFC debut. I don't know if I've told you this story, but after my UFC debut, I came home, you know, made 50K from the bonus, made gang of money from the fight, new fans, stole the show. You know, I'm doing what I love. I come home and I'm sad.
Mm.
For about 3 weeks, I'm just sad. I'm just depressed. I'm like, what's there to be sad about?
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing to be sad about. Exactly. Yeah.
But sometimes it's when you get there, when you get the thing you've always wanted, or, and then you're like, is that all there is?
Nah, but then that's when I knew, okay, I gotta go see someone about this. So I started seeing a psychologist just to try and understand these feelings. Like, so it took me until the Brunson fight was when I came back home and I was able to integrate back into society just normally and not feel sad or like depressed. And like, I was just able to just, like I said today, I just came back from the mall. There's levels to this shit. I came, like, I've avoided going to the mall for the last maybe year and a bit now because I just don't want the, can I get a photo, this and that, rah, 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 rah. But today, unfortunately, this big red jacket didn't help. Fucking me and my boy didn't help. 6'4" black guy with Super Saiyan hair didn't help. So, like, people see me and stuff, but, like, today I just felt like a kid. I dressed like a kid and I just felt like I was 16 at the mall again. Like, just having fun with me, Chance, and Joey. We went shopping. We just kick, you know, when you go to the mall, just hang out.
Mm.
And we were just kicking it. And I only got asked for photos three times, and now it was packed at Westfield and Newmarket. It was packed, but I know what it's like to be like a hot chick at a bar now. Like I walk into a room, I'd be like, you know, like hot chicks. No, like, come on, you know, hey, you know. You walk into a bar and you're like, oh, those guys are looking at me. Those guys, and every guy's trying to buy me shots. Like actually, I have to tell them like, no, I'm good, bro. And like, oh, I gotta buy you a shot, man. You the champ, like, bro. Fuck off. I'm good. Yeah. I don't say it like that, but I'm nice about it. But like, same in the mall. Like, I can see people like, oh, no, but that's the thing. But I have this energy now of just like, fuck off, leave me alone, because I don't want to spend the whole time taking photos. Because and people who don't even know you, they'll just want to take photo because oh, it's all it takes is one. And they say the same, all of them say the exact same line. Oh, just one, bro. Oh, please, just one. Oh, oh, my boyfriend's a fan. I'm like, yeah, sure he is. I'll be like, aren't you a fan? Oh, I'm a fan. Like, and was, some people don't even know. I can tell that you don't watch MMA. They want to take a photo because all these people are taking a photo. But then what's that going to do? It's taking my energy, taking my time, taking my joy. And I have a right to protect my space. I have a right to protect myself from all other people's bullshit. And if that makes me an asshole because I say no to a photo, so be it. Then I don't say no in the. I just, and people are really understanding these days. I love social distancing, like oh bro, the vibe, like because I can just like, but I still say yes to if people are nice about it and polite. But for me, I just like I said, I just want to be at the mall, just like a kid. I just want to be free, you know. So that's why I'm glad I'm able to do that, especially in Auckland. It's not as bad as somewhere as like Vegas or LA or anything, but it's somewhere I can still be. I can be me. I can be free, you know. And yeah, going to the mall today was a big step for me, and on a packed Saturday, like I haven't done that in so long. And after that, I went to Loaded, and went some other places just because I was like, "Fuck, I just want to go shopping and I just want to chill." But yeah, it feels nice just to be normal again.
Yeah, and why hadn't you done that in so long? Was there a certain anxiety?
Yeah, anxiety. Yeah. Sometimes with public places, and no one gives a fuck what you're going through. When my cat died, I went to the gas station, and then this guy, oh, Starbender, oh, gee. Okay. And then he's on the phone, bro, hold up. I'm trying to pump gas. He comes over with his fucking phone. Gee, you won't guess who's here. I'm like, bro, my cat just died today, man. It's like, oh, I just wanted you to say hi to my bro. I'm like, fuck. And then I was about to take the phone. I was like, bro, why are you even on your phone? I'm fucking, yeah. Do you see the sign? Do you see the sign? Exactly. Like people, their manners, respect, and common sense go out the window when they see someone they perceive to be famous. And it's just passed down from TV. They've seen it on Disney, on Nickelodeon, movies. You see a superstar or like someone you like, you see Bieber or whatever. They think that's how you're supposed to act when you see a famous person. I was dancing on Lil Jon's DJ table in Vegas on Jamie Foxx's birthday, and he was randomly just there, and he sees me on his live, and he goes, and then like we chat for a little bit,
yeah.
And I didn't even take a photo with him. That's just a cool story I can tell people.
Yeah,
and you don't have to believe me.
That cool story, bro.
Yeah, it's a cool story, bro. Like actual cool, and it was a good time. Like he's dancing on the table, then he gets off, then I dance on the table, and it was just weird. It was a good time, but like I didn't have to bother him and ruin the moment where, oh, can I get a photo? You know, there's a photo out there, I'm sure, but I don't even need it for the clout, you know? Like, clout's the new currency. So people just like, they don't even care. They just don't care what you're going through. Like, the guy didn't care my cat just died. He just wanted his photo or his bro to talk to me on the phone. So, yeah, there's certain anxiety with, that's why today was a big win for me. And it's nothing to some people, but for me, just to go to the mall and just walk around and just, like, not care. I just want to be free. Like, I want to be free of people's expectation of me and freedom of thought. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm. What was the clarity that therapy brought you then that allowed you to go out in public like that?
Like I said, I just have a right to protect my own space. And I think from, it was before the Whitaker fight. That's right, it was before the Whitaker fight. I was driving home after one training. I had an epiphany. I don't have to match everyone's energy. Because I've had experiences where people, if I've had a bad day or if I just finished training and they're like, oh my God, stop, oh, Israel, what the fuck? And I have to like, hey, what's up, bro? And I have to ham it up as well and match the energy, the song and dance, smile and wave. Yeah. But like, I felt like that, I was driving home and I just had this epiphany. I can't remember how, but I was just like, I think I have the recording on my phone actually. I recorded it to remind myself, like, and I talked about it. It was like a 5-minute recording. And I was like, I don't have to match everyone's energy. I'm not responsible for, and I'm like, so now if people come up to me, oh my God, and they come at me at a 10, I can still be cool and just be at my number 3. Mm. It's like, hey, what's up, man? How are you? And then they'll like, and sometimes they feel like it's a bad interaction, but I don't know. I don't care. I don't
it's
care.
Not on you.
Exactly. No. And even before I left, because after Melbourne, I remember like I put this PSA out on my story, like, look, if you see me at the airport, don't come running up yelling at me and screaming and shit, because I'll just walk away. Like, literally. And I was like, I'll just walk away. Because I, oh my God, bro, what the fuck? And they come, that's why I like the social distancing now, because people, I'm just like, yo, chill. Like, if I just feel like your energy's weird, I'd be like, no.
Like, 2 meters,
yeah,
please.
Exactly, yeah. So I like that rule in place. But then that I had to put that PSA out because I was already, that was for myself, for my own safety, for my safety of my own spirit, my own energy, because I just did the biggest shit I ever done. You know, I defended my belt, my interim belt. I defended in Melbourne. And there was a lot of stuff happening as well. And then I was alone in my hotel and I could feel that feeling again. Like, okay, it's like coffee. You know when you drink coffee, you get a coffee buzz? And then like the crashes. It's the same thing. You have all the stimulus of interviews and cameras and lights and TV and come this place, come do this and nice things and culture kings, whatnot. And then I can feel that feeling coming up again. I was like, okay, I have to find a way to deal with this. But I was like, I'm not dealing with people though. I'm not dealing with people. So I just put that PSA. I just was like, look. And actually someone even said it at the airport, like, hey bro, I don't want to disturb, but would it be all right for a photo? I was like, yeah. And then I could hear his partner, you know, like, she said, what'd she say? She's like, don't be too hype or whatever.
because of your thing,
because of my PSA. So it worked. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, let's take a photo. I mean,
that's
it was
a
all good.
Respectful way to ask for a photo.
Thank you. Yeah. All I just asked for was manners and respect. Because people, like, they don't give a fuck. And like, I could be talking to you literally at a club, having a full-blown conversation, boom, and I'm sorry. They stop. I'm sorry. I don't want to be that guy. I'm like, well, why? Then you're being that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I don't normally do that. They all say the same shit every single time. And I'm just like, I've not heard this before. Mm. But people just lose their senses about them and their manners and respect. And I'm like, bro, I'm human too. At the end of the day, I'm human too. And I'm just trying to live. So and that's what I do now when I see people, I just, like, I admire, I just watch them from afar. And if I get to interact with them, that's cool. And if the opportunity is right, I'll ask for a photo. Or maybe my cameraman or someone will take a photo. But if not, then I'm happy with the experience. I don't need that photo for the clout so I can put it on my gram or on my Snapchat, be like, I was with him, you know? Like, what does that do for you? Cool story, bro. Yeah. But I think everyone has a right to protect their own. Not even if they're famous. Everyone in your own personal life, I'm sure there's people that you don't fuck with because you're like, okay, our friendship has lasted its course, so I don't know that person, but I don't like the energy. But you have every right to protect your own energy, your own space, your own vibe. Yeah, like you have to protect your own body. So same thing.
Mm. Yeah. I guess how apart from that, how are you, man?
Yeah, how you been doing?
I'm great. Yeah. No, honestly, I'm good. Going through some things at the moment, yes, but like we all are. But I'm good. I'm in a healthy space. I'm aware of what's happening in my life, in my body, in my head. So that's the main thing, at least, because a lot of people, they're never aware. They just sleep to their own bullshit. Because everyone from childhood. I'm trying to see if I can share this story. Everyone deals with shit that you don't even know about. Like, even yourself, unless you really ask those questions. That's why therapy is good, because they are trained in asking you the right questions. They don't tell you anything.
No.
Mainly, they just ask you questions. And then you kind of just do this. Like, even this is therapeutic, because I'm kind of learning some new stuff as well, a little bit, gems here and there. But, like, to find out things about yourself that you've numbed or suppressed. Example, I used to be a real people pleaser when I was a kid, when I was in Rotorua, when I was in Whanganui, because I wanted to fit in so bad. Like, I remember when Brotown was on, I sounded like Jeff DeMaldi. Like, I was trying, everything was out, not even out, you'll eat us. I'm still like that when I hang out with my Rotorua boys. Sometimes you hear like the twang come out.
Yeah.
But like, it was because I was trying to fit in so much. But now I realized, I see that kid coming back out sometimes. And I told my therapist one time, I thought I drowned him. I thought I buried him. She's like, why would you do that? And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, well, if you see someone drowning a kid, what would you do? And I was like, no, don't let him. Exactly. And it's like, and that's where fucking when Drake put out this mixtape, fucking Drake, when he put out that mixtape, the new one, it was on my story. I got some people worried. I kind of just flex my feelings because I'm like, bro, everyone's always, and I've, we're all guilty of it. See social media and see someone's life. Oh, they lived, if only, you know. And I was like, let me show people that I go through some shit too. So on my story that whole night, I was just on my Drake type shit. You know, I was just like, bro, the mixtape, it was Not You Too with Chris Brown and Losses. Oh, every time I hear Losses, I cry. I just feel it. Like it just, I can hear it right now. Shit's giving me goosebumps. But like,
what is it about Losses?
The track.
Yeah.
I don't know. I had some losses recently. Like I said, my cat and other things. And it just really, like, it cut me. Yeah, it cut me deep. It tried to make me cry. Fuck you. Nah, but just like, I mean, you know, we all go through things and not everyone has to know all the time. But like, for me, it's just like, yeah, it just, and I was just like, I'll use this opportunity to show people that I can be vulnerable. But then I started getting texts and calls and stuff. Like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm not suicidal. Fucking relax. Like, is it so strange for someone to show some vulnerability to the point where it's like, oh my God. People are worried. Oh, I was like, we all go through this shit. And I had this caption on one of my stories and it was a Nothing Was the Same album cover with Drake looking at his younger self. And it was a caption about showing love to my younger self because that was that day I made that epiphany with my therapist. And it was like, that mixtape didn't help either because it just put me in my feels. And then I was just like, I was showing love to my younger self. And you have to care for that little boy because you can't just drown him because you didn't like him or because you didn't like what he represented. You have to show love to that kid. So I'm still going through it. I'm still going through the growth, you know, but it's part of life. We all go through it. And I just have to show people, like, I can flex you my McLaren. I can flex you my this, my that. But, yeah, let me flex you my feelings, my other feelings, so that way people can relate and feel like, oh, it's okay. And what are they going to say? I kick ass anyway, you know?
Hug your younger self. Don't drown him.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's what she says. And I've been doing that. So like I said, I've been good. I've not been bored this lockdown. I've just been enjoying myself. I've been trying to level up. I let some admin shit slip on the wayside, but I'm picking it back up, you know, all the boring work.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just enjoying myself, man. I like where I'm at. I like where I'm heading. And the future's bright, but yeah, it's, you can never, there's always this, like, it's also something I'm working through as well, because if things are going too well sometimes, what's around the corner? I don't know if you've ever had that. Everything's just smooth sailing. You're like, okay, something bad's definitely going to happen.
You're waiting for the other.
Or even you thinking that makes something happen.
You create it. We talked about it a little bit, but yeah, it's crazy. I'm making some new discoveries as well about myself, but like I said, I just want to keep leveling up, man. And yeah, don't we all? We all deserve to level up.
Level up. Mm. Yeah.
All right.
Mic drop.
That's it.
That's the end.
Well, let me get my Uber real quick.
Finish.